The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Good morning. This is Andrew Locher. I'm substitute hosting for Stephen Fleury today. I'd like to thank you for tuning in during such a busy time of year. Today is the Day of Atonement, and so we pre-recorded this program so that we can keep the holy day. But we also have a lot of news to cover, and so it's important for us to keep things moving. Well, summertime is already in the rearview mirror, you might say. The temperatures have cooled off. Campus is looking like the fall. It's beautiful. School has been in session, and we're now in the midst of the fall holiday break. Last week, I was up in Calgary, Alberta, and standing in snow as I was scraping my windows with my fingernails, since the rental car company did not put a snow scraper in the car. But it was nice to be in the snow, and I'm looking forward to the wintertime. Our schools, as I said, have been in session. We're on break now, both Imperial Academy and Armstrong College. And we're looking forward to really a very active year. We have a great student body. Many of them are away on break right now, but some remained behind here to work on campus. There is a last-minute busyness of activities around campus as we try to get ready for the Feast of Tabernacles. I thought before we got into the program, I'd talk to you just a little bit about the Key of David program and the new stations that we've started here in the last week or so. This is the first weekend of October, and we added five new markets, or really, I guess, three new markets and changed things up a little bit. And we've had pretty good results already. In Los Angeles, we moved from an independent station to the Fox affiliate. And we're excited about that move because the station is more popular. It generally draws a larger audience. Our time is earlier in the day than what we used to have on the other independent station. And yet it also does represent a new audience for us. So we're excited about the upgrade that we have in Los Angeles. Maybe we'll get a later time down the road just a little bit. But we also started broadcasting in Colorado Springs, Colorado, Joplin, Missouri, and Richmond, Virginia this past weekend. And in addition to that, we have another broadcast now, or another airing on the CW Plus network on Friday mornings that accompanies our ION network broadcast on Friday mornings. And that does give us a pretty good indication of what kind of response we'll receive. The CW Plus has been a really effective network for us, and it'll be interesting to see how this early Friday morning time works out for us. We are climbing out of the summer slump, where TV response hits a low during the summer. After the fall or into the fall, the response starts to climb pretty steadily before it drops off again in the late spring. This is common throughout the industry. I've mentioned it before. And that's why you see so many repeat programs on all stations in all programming, so many repeats during the summer. We have had a very busy taping schedule. Mr. Gerald Fleury has taped seven new programs over the last 7 weeks, and perhaps one more tomorrow, the final program of this season. Dating back to 1993, Mr. Fleury has taped over 840 different episodes of The Key of David. And if you were to listen to one program a day, obviously you can do the math here. One program per day, it would take you well over 2 years. In fact, I think it's 2 years and about 3 months to watch just one program a day. That's a pretty remarkable amount of programs. I believe we've been on television for more than 1,350 weeks. Again, another substantial number. This season, from October or the end of the feast last year to the start of the feast this year, that's how we mark our seasons. But this season, Mr. Fleury's taped 34 and again, perhaps 35 new episodes. That's the most we've taped in a season in the last 8 years. And really, I think it reflects what's taking place in the world around us. There is a lot of prophecy being fulfilled. There is a lot of education that God needs to share with this world. I was looking back over our history, and I noticed that one season, and I think it was in the early 2000s. One season, we taped 48 new programs. It was just a really busy time as God was giving us, obviously, a lot of revelation. Back in those days, we traveled overseas more frequently. Mr. Fleury taped programs overseas and really pushed himself to give us that many new programs. It really was a pretty remarkable year. We've only done that many just one time. But typically, we tape anywhere from 28 to 30, 35 new programs a year. We've spent over $40 million to buy airtime to share this message with the world. We currently have hundreds of stations around the planet. Millions have watched. That's not an exaggeration. Millions have watched. Millions have subscribed and requested literature over the year. Now, obviously, a lot of people don't renew, but there are quite a few that have stuck with it since 2007. And that's the year that we established our YouTube channel. We were on YouTube prior to that, but we didn't necessarily have a channel. But since 2007, more than 10.8 million views of the Key of David program have taken place through YouTube. There are 637 different videos on our channel. Our most viewed program is really a fantastic program, and I'm just thrilled to see this. Our most viewed program on YouTube is The New Throne of David, and more than 1.3 million people have viewed that program. It is one that we promote, and that does obviously add to the number of views. And we obviously know not everybody watches the program from start to finish, but that's pretty encouraging to see that huge of a response. Now, our recent programs have been popular. They've been growing in response. Titles such as Strong Man Rising in Europe, which aired this past weekend. Prior to that, we had the most pivotal End Time Bible Prophecy, another program on how to be happy. So really great to see the response picking up as it is, again, this time of year especially. But it is nice to get more calls, send out more literature. Next week should be a big responder for us. The title of that program is Who Can But Prophesy? There certainly is not a lack of material that we produce. I think everybody knows that who's a regular listener to this program. If you've visited our websites, thetrumpet.com or pcg.church, you'll find thousands of articles, videos, even original music that we've recorded that you can listen to. We have an online Bible correspondence course, youth Bible lessons, and so much more available for your use online. Or we're happy to send it to you anywhere in the world. We're happy to just share this wonderful truth with you. Well, one last statistic to share with you. We typically go through a lot of these statistics this time of year, and so I thought it'd be nice to share them with our radio audience. Our warehouse here in Edmond on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, the warehouse is really just bursting at the seams with literature. We continue to bring in truckload after truckload, new booklets. There's a new booklet on the book of Hebrews. And then, of course, we have to replenish our old stock as we send out tens of thousands of books each month. I was surprised to see that we have more than 1.5 million pieces of literature ready to send you. So help us out. Order some books or booklets. Subscribe to the correspondence course lessons if you don't have a subscription already. But again, only if you're going to use them. I thought that was a really interesting point that Stephen Fleury has brought out at the campaigns. He told all the people attending there, hey, we have a literature table back there full of literature for you to request or to take home with you, but we only want you to do so if you're going to use them. That is the importance of this education that we have here, is to use it. At those public appearance campaigns, we have a very impressive spread of literature to display, to try to encourage individuals to make a request or, again, to pick up a free copy there. I think we use 2 or 3 8-foot-long tables. They're just packed with literature. It's high quality. It's engaging material. And there's so much that you can really dig into and learn more about. And again, don't forget about what you can do online. We are here to help. Our motivation is to educate. And best of all, everything we offer has already been paid for. There is no cost to you whatsoever. So browse our offerings online, find a subject, request that material, and then really dig in. That's what we really want, so that you can enjoy this education, so you can learn quite a bit more. Well, we'll take a short break right now, and when I return, I want to get into an overlooked impact that Donald Trump is having on the judiciary branch of the U.S. government. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Thank you for staying with us. I want to discuss, as I said, something that's underreported, the way that President Trump is impacting the United States. It is not that the media is unaware, but you don't hear very much about it on mainstream media. In a way, it's kind of like the other positive developments or the accomplishments of this administration. If it does not agree with the leftist agenda, then it's often ignored. And that's really to their peril. This is something that they should be paying attention to. We've mentioned it a few times on this particular radio program or through some of our other materials that we offer online. And what President Donald Trump is doing would have a lasting impact if time were to go on. Now, I'm fully aware that this end time resurgence fueled by a Jeroboam figure does have a limit of time. All right? It's not going to carry on forever. In fact, it's temporary. But consider the facts as presented in this video. And I'll apologize a little bit up front here. It's a little bit longer than we typically play. It's about three and a half minutes long. But I think it's a very good explanation of what President Trump is doing for this particular branch of government.
A federal judge ruled in favor of the administration.
A federal judge has now blocked the third version of President Trump's travel ban.
With gridlock in Congress and President Trump in the White House, the power of the U.S. courts is becoming increasingly apparent and politicized. Republicans have a prime opportunity to leave their mark on the nation's courts.
It's always been that Republicans, for some reason, care more about the courts than Democrats do.
Supreme Court justices. That's right. That's all you have to think.
And Donald Trump really capitalized on that in this past election.
More than a quarter of Trump voters said the Supreme Court was the most important issue to them. With that momentum behind him, Trump entered the White House with 108 vacancies for federal judges with life terms. That's one-eighth of the nation's 870 federal judges, more than any president since Bill Clinton.
President Obama faced a Republican Senate in his last 2 years, and those Republicans really blocked his nominees. That left a lot of openings to be filled right away, almost historic level.
The Senate continues our work to confirm President Trump's well-qualified judicial nominees.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has made courts one of his priorities.
This is my top priority. So as soon as they come out of committee, if I have a choice between taking up a particular bill or taking up a circuit court judge, I take up a circuit court judge because I think it makes the longest lasting contribution to making this the kind of country it ought to be.
As older judges continue to retire, Trump has handed more vacancies. 18 months in, 145 vacancies waited to be filled. Trump had nominated 137 federal judges at that point. Only 43 of them were appointed by the Senate, but that's on par with past presidents. And by the end of Trump's term in 2020, more than half of all life-term judges will be eligible for retirement.
Over 99% of the cases are decided at the lower federal courts. And so it's really important to have judges at those levels who are going to be faithful to the law.
One relatively recent phenomenon is the role of outside groups in starting almost campaigns for these Supreme Court nominees and even for some of the lower court nominees.
Tell your senator, confirm Kavanaugh.
Put Kyle Duncan on the Fifth Circuit.
They are spending millions of dollars on both sides.
The truth comes out.
The number of groups engaged in fighting the Trump administration's court packing scheme has grown, hugely grown.
Our role, really, from my perspective, is from the outside to be able to defend some of those nominees and correct some of the misconceptions, the distortions of your record. And we've seen, as the politicization of the process has ramped up, that happening more and more.
The number of Trump's appeals court appointments in particular stands out. He's appointed far more judges to the circuit courts of appeals than any recent president at this point in their term.
Appeals courts are important because they cover multi-state regions. And so whatever those courts decide becomes precedent in that region. Like all federal judges, they serve for life. And the Trump administration has really looked for younger judges. A lot of the judges that they've put on the appeals courts will serve for decades.
The bulk of our current federal judges were appointed by President Obama, but some who were appointed by Gerald Ford and Lyndon B. Johnson are still on the bench. Politicizing judicial appointments doesn't start or end with Trump, but his appointees could chart the nation's course for generations to come.
Now, that's a pretty amazing report that came from the Washington Post, September 12th, 2018. And it does show you that the appointment of these life-term judges does have a long-lasting impact, perhaps the strongest impact a president can leave on the country. And as the video pointed out, the Republican Party has given this great priority. They might disagree personally with a policy here or there. They might be a little scared of the way that President Trump is aggressively taking on the swamp and really charting his course for this country. But they can't deny the impact he's having on the economy, on shaping the judiciary to be much more conservative. And because the Senate confirms the president's nominations, control of the Senate is paramount to shaping the judiciary branch of the government. President Trump has also pushed to appoint younger judges. Really, he's very clever in what he's doing. Now, all of this is promoted, and I think in a good way, they're at least being clever. Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, and Lindsey Graham, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, they're fully supportive, of course, of what's going on, and they are working to move these judges through. Now, their work isn't done yet. Think about this. This information I have came from Wikipedia. So, but before you judge me, get it? Judge me? Before you judge the source, these references that they cite came from a U.S. government website entitled, or the URL is uscourts.gov. Wikipedia says, this is a comprehensive list of all Article 3 and Article 4 United States federal judges appointed by Donald Trump during his presidency, as well as a partial list of Article 1 federal judicial appointments. I won't get into that. They say as of September 30th, 2019, about 4 or 5 days, I guess it's about 8 days ago now, as of September 30th, the United States Senate has confirmed 152 Article 3 judges nominated by President Trump. And that, of course, includes the two associate justices of the Supreme Court, 43 judges of the United States Courts of Appeal, 105 judges for the United States District Courts, and 2 judges for the United States Court of International Trade. Again, these are all life-term judge appointments. This article continues, there are currently 37 nominations to Article III courts awaiting Senate action, including 4 for the Courts of Appeals and 33 for District Courts. There are currently 4 vacancies on the U.S. Court of Appeals, 92 vacancies in the U.S. District Courts, 2 vacancies in the Court of International Trade. Of course, with Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health deteriorating, perhaps another Supreme Court justice. Pretty amazing, the numbers here. I want to summarize that for you a little bit. I rushed through those stats. This is from an article entitled Federal Judicial Vacancy Count. And this is from October 3rd, so a few days after the Wikipedia update and just a couple days in the past. This report says the federal vacancy count tracks vacancies, nominations, and confirmations to all United States Article III federal courts. It asks, what is a vacancy? A vacancy occurs when a judge resigns, retires, takes senior status, or dies. Article 3 judges refer to judges who serve on the courts authorized by the third article of the Constitution, which created and enumerated the powers of the judiciary. Article 3 judges are appointed for life terms, unless a judge is impeached and removed from office, something that has occurred only 8 times in the history of the federal judiciary. It is the judge's decision how long they remain on the court. Now, of course, we're familiar with the Democratic penchant or the Democrats' penchant for impeachment. And yet, historically, it's been a really pretty rare occurrence. And so as President Trump is loading up the judiciary, he's filling the vacancies of these federal judges, there's little that the Democrats can do. And as was pointed out in that video, The number of vacancies was really near a historic high for President Donald Trump, a real opportunity for the conservative party. This article continues, the Constitution prescribes the process for filling a vacancy. The president nominates a candidate who then must be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. And so that's the process. And it doesn't get a lot of press. It doesn't get a lot of coverage. And yet the impact is perhaps very, very substantial. This article talks about the vacancy count for October 3rd. It says the total vacancy percentage was 10.1%, and there were 98 vacancies out of the 870 Article III judicial positions. And so he's already appointed 152 judges, life-term judges, still 10% of all of those life-term judicial positions, 10% are sitting vacant. 98 more that could be filled. If he does that during this first term, he will have basically replaced or appointed 30% of all the positions in the federal judiciary that are Article III positions. And there's still obviously quite a bit of time left in his first term. The U.S. Court of Appeals also has been impacted. Again, these are same Article III judges. But I was looking at this. He's already appointed 43 judges to sit on the U.S. Court of Appeals. There's only 179 total judges there. He's replaced 43. There's 18 openings there. There were 18 openings when he took office, and he's already filled 14 of those. Now, if you pay attention to the importance of the courts and you pay attention to the judgments that come out against the president's desire to build a wall or to enact some bit of legislation, what you're finding is that as he replaces more justices that are more conservative-minded, it doesn't guarantee they'll support him. But it's likely that they will. You can see a tremendous growing influence on policy, on legal matters. And it really is something that the Democrats should be paying attention to. They are having a major impact on the functioning of this nation. We, as the Philadelphia Church of God, have experienced the impact of working through the federal court system and going through the Federal Court of Appeals. And the district where we had to fight that battle was quite liberal at the time. That district is being impacted by President Trump. Now, we have a great booklet on Habakkuk that I encourage you to request. And if you have it, take it back out and read it. That booklet details our six-year court battle with the Laodiceans. We were fighting for the inspired works of Herbert W. Armstrong. Habakkuk was an Old Testament prophet, and he was used to prophesy about an end-time failure of judges to produce right judgments. Habakkuk said, "Why do you show me iniquity?" He's talking to God. "Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. Therefore, the law is slacked, and judgment does never go forth, for the wicked does compass about the righteous. Therefore, wrong judgment proceeds." That's Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 3 through 4. And so he's describing this end time condition in which there's a failure of the judges to enforce the law. The law is slacked. And as a result, justice does not prevail. Wrong judgment proceeds. Now, in our fascinating booklet on Habakkuk, which again, I encourage you to order, there is a lot of detail that God gave us during our court battle that proved to be quite informative. And actually, it directed our fight in the courts. There's an amazing counterpart to the Habakkuk booklet, and that's a book authored by your regular host, Stephen Fleury. His book is entitled Raising the Ruins. The detail in that book of the court case, it gives you really a blow-by-blow account of the ups, the downs, the spiritual revelation throughout the court case. As it all unfolded, it's laid out there for you. It's really a riveting read. And I believe if you read that, it will galvanize your faith like few other booklets or books that we have. Our victory in that court case has been described as one of the most amazing miracles this church has ever experienced or perhaps will experience. So it's all chronicled for you there. It's interesting to compare what we went through and to consider that in light of what Donald Trump is doing to the courts. Both of those books will be sent to you free of charge. There's no obligation. It's there for you to simply make a request. You can go to our website, thetrumpet.com, or you can send an email to tdr@kpcg.fm and make your request that way. Now, the Bible is replete with prophecies and statements about man's inability to judge righteously. It's just a character weakness. In fact, it says we can't even guide our own steps, let alone judge or guide another person's. As we'll picture during the Feast of Tabernacles, one of Christ's duties when he returns is to execute righteous judgment. You ought to take time to go read through Isaiah chapter 11. It describes how he'll judge and what a refreshing experience that is going to be for mankind. The church has received a lot of instruction. Even the first century New Testament church received instruction from the Apostle Paul. He was writing to the Corinthians, and he told them that they would be responsible for judging angels that turned into demons. That responsibility comes after their conversion, after that they've become God. And yet in that same message, Paul warned the Corinthians not to turn to the courts of man to solve their interpersonal conflicts. You can't go to man to judge man and expect a righteous judgment. Rather, as Paul taught the church, we should resolve our problems internally. The church is there to assist if necessary, but we should have the character to work with one another. You can study Matthew chapter 18 for more details on that. And yet, if you look at things nationally, we still live in this age of man ruling man, and all of that under the influence of Satan the devil. That's a large part of what we're going to study on this Day of Atonement at church services, the influence of the devil. It's interesting to me how God is, I think, in a way, slowing the destruction of end-time nations of Israel by appointing more conservative judges to the court system. It's just another way that God can measure out how events transpire. And it's another tool that an end-time Jeroboam has been using to save Israel temporarily. Well, we're going to take a short break now. And when we return, I want to get into a short Bible study about yet another prominent current event. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily radio program. We are interested in your thoughts and your feedback, and encourage you to send those in to tdr@kpcg.fm. As I've mentioned a few times, we are in the midst of the fall holy days. It's such an inspiring time. Atonement is a commanded holy day that features many fantastic prophecies. Satan is going to be bound, detained. He'll be momentarily released after 1,000 years imprisonment, and then ultimately banished forever. He was conquered by Christ when Jesus came to the earth about 2,000 years ago. And this special holy day inspires us to know there is a time coming when Satan's destructive broadcasts won't afflict mankind. If this isn't familiar to you, we have all kinds of literature about this day in particular. We have a great booklet to help you understand that. It's entitled God's Holy Days or Pagan Holidays, which we also have correspondence course lessons devoted to this special holy day. And while the remaining holy days after atonement include the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day, they're so inspiring and something that really all of us look forward to throughout the year, it is very important for us not to quickly breeze past trumpets or atonement. This segment that we'll finish up today's program with focuses more on our battle to conquer Satan. So be careful not to overlook this necessary step in God's holy day plan. You can look through Leviticus 16, Revelation chapter 20 for more details. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, "And you has he quickened, who were dead in trespasses and sins, wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience, among whom also we had our conversation in times past in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others." Paul is talking to the Ephesians and referring back to the old way of life, where they were essentially dead. Their sins, their trespasses, their way of thinking was going to result in their death. All of it influenced by the broadcast of the arch deceiver, Satan the devil. But then Paul talks about this transition, that we are past that. We are past it. Satan broadcasts negative, self-destroying thoughts and attitudes. The Apostle Peter tells us to be non-responsive to those broadcasts of the devil. In fact, to go so far as to resist him. And we're told by God that if we resist Satan, if we don't succumb to those negative broadcasts, that Satan will flee from us. He will move on to a weaker target. This is a daily struggle in this present evil world for all of mankind. And it's pretty common to underestimate Satan's power, the effectiveness of his broadcast. Satan knows how to magnify our lusts and the desires of our flesh. There are all kinds of addictions in this world, all of them harmful. I wanted to talk about addictions here as we wrap things up. There's obviously the epidemic of opioid addiction, but there's other addictions such as marijuana, alcohol, pornography, use of smartphones, obesity, depression, video games, violence, laziness. I mean, you go through all of these various addictions, all of them eat away at or outright destroy our incredible human potential. Now, it's not unfamiliar to man to recognize that there are addictions. I want to play to you a clip from a TED Talk given about 4 years ago by John Hari. And he gave this over in Britain. Just listen to this first clip.
One of my earliest memories is of trying to wake up one of my relatives and not being able to. And I was just a little kid, so I didn't really understand why. But as I got older, I realized we had drug addiction in my family, including later cocaine addiction. I've been thinking about it a lot lately, partly because it's now exactly 100 years since drugs were first banned in the United States and Britain, and we then imposed that on the rest of the world. It's a century since we made this really fateful decision to take addicts and punish them and make them suffer because we believed that would deter them, it would give them an incentive to stop. And a few years ago, I was looking at some of the addicts in my life who I love and trying to figure out if there was some way to help them. And I realized there were loads of incredibly basic questions I just didn't know the answer to. Like, what really causes addiction? Why do we carry on with this approach that doesn't seem to be working? And is there a better way out there that we could try instead? So I read loads of stuff about it, and I couldn't really find the answers I was looking for. So I thought, okay, I'll go and sit with different people around the world who've lived this and studied this and talk to them and see if I can learn from them. And I didn't realize I would end up going over 30,000 miles at the start, but I ended up going and meeting loads of different people, from a transgender crack dealer in Brownsville, Brooklyn, to a scientist who spends a lot of time feeding hallucinogens to mongooses to see if they like them. It turns out they do, but only in very specific circumstances. To the only country that's ever decriminalized all drugs, from cannabis to crack, Portugal. And the thing I realized that really blew my mind is almost everything we think we know about addiction is wrong. And if we start to absorb the new evidence about addiction, I think we're going to have to change a lot more than our drug policies.
Now, that's an interesting TED Talk to listen to. Again, it was given back in July 2015. And the man speaking is Johan Hari. And as you listen to his message, it's a human approach. It's actually, in a lot of ways, very liberal. He does remove a lot of personal responsibility for the decisions that get people into the circumstances they're in. Now, of course, we love and care for those that are addicted to a lot of different things. Again, we offer educational materials to help people deal with addictions. But we have to understand the cause, the real cause. If we're going to fix the problem, then we need to understand what causes these problems. We need God's help. This man went on to talk in his presentation there about experiments that they've done with rats. And bear with me here for a moment. I think it's an interesting observation they make. They talked about putting a rat into a cage with two types of water dispensed there for the rat to choose from. One has cocaine in it. The other has just regular water. And what they observed is that in almost every case, the rat would overdose on the cocaine water. It was drawn to the water. And that shouldn't surprise us. And so the scientists thought, well, I wonder if, because he only has two choices in this cage, that of course he's going to go to what feels good. And so this scientist went on to create what he called a rat park, where they put other rats, other food, different activities in the cage. And what they observed was that the rat rarely went to the cocaine water because they were engaged in other activities. So he speculated. Now, you can't ask a rat why he made the decisions that he made. But again, I think it's an interesting experiment. And this man, this Mr. Hari, who gave this TED Talk, discussed another test or experiment that wasn't set up in such a way where human beings could be the subject of study, because you can't compare the life of a rat to the life of a human being. And so I want to play to you his clip here about this human experiment.
But fortunately, there was a human experiment into the exact same principle happening at the exact same time. It was called the Vietnam War. In Vietnam, 20% of all American troops were using loads of heroin. And if you look at the news reports from the time, they were really worried because they thought, my God, we're going to have hundreds of thousands of junkies on the streets of the United States when the war ends. It made total sense. Now, those soldiers who were using loads of heroin were followed home. The Archives of General Psychiatry did a really detailed study. And what happened to them? It turns out they didn't go to rehab. They didn't go into withdrawal. 95% of them just stopped. Now, if you believe the story about chemical hooks, that makes absolutely no sense. But Professor Alexander began to think there might be a different story about addiction. He said, what if addiction isn't about your chemical hooks? What if addiction is about your cage? What if addiction is an adaptation to your environment? Looking at this, there was another professor called Peter Cohen in the Netherlands who said, maybe we shouldn't even call it addiction. Maybe we should call it bonding. Human beings have a natural and innate need to bond. And when we're happy and healthy, we'll bond and connect with each other. But if you can't do that because you're traumatized or isolated or beaten down by life, you will bond with something that will give you some sense of relief. Now, that might be gambling, that might be pornography, that might be cocaine, that might be cannabis, but you will bond and connect with something because that's our nature. That's what we want as human beings.
Now, I'm not advocating the science of man, but there is a power in observation. The conclusions that scientists come up with often are quite wrong, erroneous. For this particular case, they talk about changing labels or these pie-in-the-sky dreams and simple liberal changes that they think will fix the problem. God has given us minds capable of connecting with Him to find solutions, and that's what we need to talk about. Mr. Hari's solutions are not valid. His talk took place 4 years ago. The scientists that he was working with studied this years ago. Have addictions gotten better in the last 4 years, or do we see an increase? Well, I think you'd argue that there's been an increase in addictions. There's growing problems where mankind is just choosing to weigh himself down. Now, I'm not against Mr. Hari, but the problem with mankind is they simply cannot figure out how to solve spiritual problems. They can't conquer them of and by themselves. We have another book that I'm sure you're familiar with, Mystery of the Ages. Here's an insightful quote from that book. It's from the second chapter about the mystery of angels and evil spirits. Mr. Armstrong says, "Angels are invisible, immortal spirit beings with power and knowledge superior to humans." He quotes 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. "They have seen all the activities of mankind on the earth and therefore know more about the human mind, psychology, sociology, science, and all the arts than any living man." End quote. Now, what makes that quote so interesting to me is the fact that the minds of a spirit being, or the mind, doesn't decay like ours. They don't forget, in other words. And they've learned over all the history of man how to, quote unquote, push our buttons, right? They know more about a psychological response or a sociological response to a certain situation. And so they can put these catalysts in our path that spark a thought that might lead to an addictive behavior. But human beings are free moral agents. We choose. Again, addictions come in many different forms, and my point is that none of us are immune to them. So we have to be alert and on guard to prevent them from taking us down. We can't conquer these problems on our own, but the good news is we don't have to. We don't have to fight alone. In Philippians 4, verse 13, we're told, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We can conquer addiction. We can flee from Satan the devil. We can resist him. Christ will be there to help us. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 through 7, it says, likewise, you younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all of your care upon him, for he cares for you. So that's how we conquer. The changes we need to make basically revolve around submitting to God's authority in our lives. That is the solution. Taking our problems to God. Living according to his laws. Using the power of the Holy Spirit to do so. We have to be doers. We have to act on righteousness. We have to bring God into the fight. Can we humble ourselves? It does take hard work. We all know that. God says, look, cast all of your care, all of your needs, your struggles, put it all on me, Christ says. Bring him into the fight with you and expect results. God does care for us. If we can master this submission, think about what Peter says will be the final result. This is 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 through 11. Just carrying on here. He says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour, whom resists steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. But the God of all grace, who has called us unto his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while, makes you perfect, establishes, strengthens, settles you. To him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Right? It's a matter of looking to God. But the beauty of this very special holy day, the Day of Atonement, pictures for us a time when Satan is removed, when those broadcasts stop, those broadcasts that appeal to our lusts, to our addictions. It doesn't mean that the problems go away, but the influence, the drive, the motivation that naturally appeals to the human mind, that is what is going to stop. And that is pictured by this fantastic holy day. And really, without this holy day, without Satan being bound, how could we have a wonderful world tomorrow? How could we move on through the last great day and into the rest of the universe? You see, this is a very necessary holy day. Now, again, we don't have time in a one-hour program to solve all your problems. And in fact, it's not us that do it. But we do have educational materials. We do have another wonderful booklet, How to Be an Overcomer. That should really be part of your personal library. It's a battle guide that ensures our spiritual warfare ends with glorious success. It's a booklet that we'd be reading several times throughout the year, every year at a minimum, if we know what's good for us. So be sure to request your copy. Be sure to use your copy and expect miracles. Well, it's been great to be with you today. Thank you for making the Trumpet Daily Radio program part of your day. Hope it gets off to a good start. Have a great day.